We have anyone here for the first time?
We're all regulars.
Oh, first time. Okay, well. Thank you for spending your Friday night with us. We happen to think that there's nothing better you can do with your time than try to understand what is the highest pleasure. To understand what the highest pleasure is, you have to understand what is the source of all pleasure. In this way, I hope that you may agree that your human form of life has a quest. That quest is to find the source of everything. But particularly, because you have the pleasure-seeking tendency, you should want to find the source of all pleasure. Certainly you'll agree that all around you, you try to surround yourself with pleasurable objects, pleasurable experiences, pleasurable people. And as I'm sure everyone will agree, from time to time, these so-called pleasurable objects and circumstances and people, they cause you displeasure. It's quite amazing how the same thing that one day gives you pleasure, the next day gives you anxiety. The same person who one day gives you enjoyment, the next day makes you so angry you never want to see that person again. This is life in material existence. You cannot separate out the unpleasantries from the pleasantries. They all are mixed together. And this makes existence very frustrating and bewildering. How it is that the very same thing that gives you delight the next moment can give you distress. The very same person that you enjoy the next minute, you never want to see again. I'm sure you all had that experience. Being with some dearly beloved and thinking, this is it, or this is almost it. And then sometime later, get out of my life, I never want to see you again. Or you get some object that you're so delighted to obtain, but then that same thing gives you such anxiety. You buy something new from the store, whether it's a new mobile phone or a new computer or new anything, household gadget. And at first it seems like such a delight to have. And then it breaks, or it's not functioning right, and it puts you in such anxiety. So this world is like that. What frustrates you is that you want pleasure without impediment. You want pleasure without any deterrent. And you're very disturbed when you can't get that. It's very frustrating that all your experiences of pleasure have a price to them, in that they're always infiltrated with distress and often overwhelmed with distress. In this way, an intelligent person is quite skeptical about the opportunities for hassle-free pleasure in this world. That's a good phrase, hassle-free pleasure. It's not there. Even what you think is pleasure in this world is bound up with so many hassles. Now, in our hearts, we all like a solid whiff, or a gulp of pure pleasure. But that's only in dreaming. Doesn't happen, whether on the weekend or during the weekdays. All your attempts at happiness always are laced with distress, if not saturated with distress. An intelligent person begins to wonder, is this the way life is? Might there be something more than this or not? Now, as I always explain, often as you get older, you just begin to become resigned to this phenomenon. And you just adopt the posture that, well, you got to take the bitter with the sweet. Without distress, you'll never know what happiness is. And with distress, you can appreciate happiness when it comes. It's the attitude you take as you get older. That's life. That's the way it is. Just got to do the best you can. But before we adopt that attitude, no matter how old you are, we should give ourselves a chance and do some searching. Is it true that this is the best life has to offer? Pleasure always bound up with hassles? Why do I have this thirst, this hankering for hassle-free pleasure? Why do I have that? Is it some kind of curse? Wishful thinking? What is it that creates the hassles? Well, it's a long list. But you can meditate on a few major items that create hassles, impediments to this pleasure-seeking, hankering, or propensity. First of all, there is time. Time destroys everything. Those of you who have read Bhagavad Gita, you know. Krishna says it. He comes as time and destroys everything. No matter what kind of experience you have in the material cosmos, time is there to corrode it, to erode it. And that means destruction. You all know the effects of time on your body, on your mind also. You know the effects of time on your relationships. A person who seems so scintillating to you and delightful sometime later becomes totally distasteful to you. The relationship aged. It didn't withstand the test of time. You all will have had that experience. And then you say things like, where did the love go? Well, as I always say, we might ask ourselves, was the love really there? But we won't deal with that tonight. We'll say, okay, where did the love go? As if it was really there. You see, when activities are within the reach of time, they can't really be for real. If you want to have real relationships, you've got to get out of the clutches of time. That is what yoga is really about. How to have individual pursuits and relationships that are immune to the ravages of time. That means if you really say that you love someone and care for someone, you have to be able to give that person something that's beyond the ravages of time. Otherwise, what is the value of what you're really giving, if time can claw it apart constantly? When we take into account this attack by time on everything material, we can see then that if we're really serious about pleasure, we have a lot of work to do to get around these problems created by time. And also we can see that if we're really going to benefit other people and care for them, we have to benefit them and care for them in a way that time cannot corrode. Otherwise, it's futile. But sometimes, because we don't know any better, we think better do something futile than nothing at all. You can imagine yourself saying to someone, I'm going to give you my best, my all in all. I know it's subject to the ravages of time, but that's all that I can do. Let's just do the best we can before the hourglass runs out.
You know, you can do much better than that.
That is the message of the Vedic knowledge from India. You can do much better than simply giving someone some temporary consolation as to being torn apart by time. You can give someone experiences that are beyond the reach of time. Once you are beyond the reach of time, then your pleasure-seeking propensity can flow without impediment. Time manifests as your body. Your body's like a clock. The very thing that you think should give you pleasure, this body, is a time bomb. From the moment you're born, the body is decaying. You don't know how long the clock of the body will last. A couple of years ago when I was in South America, you might have remembered this event that happened, this horrible incident. Some of the guerrillas fighting in Colombia, they went to one landowner. It was a lady in her 40s. And they put around her neck a time bomb. They locked it. And you could see the news media, they showed the picture of the lady with this thing, this tube of the thing, locked on her neck. So the military came and they were desperately trying to defuse this time bomb while it's ticking, ticking, ticking. And you see the picture of the lady's face just full of anxiety. What's going to happen to me? Unfortunately, however, the bomb exploded, killing not only her, but also the military persons who were trying to defuse the bomb. Everyone in the group is very horrible. But, looked at it another way, our bodies are just like that time bomb. We don't know when they're going to explode. Somehow or other, we have this urge in us. Never mind, this body is a time bomb. Do things with it to find happiness. Get as many enjoyable experiences and stimulations as possible with this temporary time bomb on your body. And then when it explodes, at least you have your good share. No, there's much better things to aspire. When we recognize time as an impediment to our pleasure, then we start seriously thinking, what is the origin of time? You should also think, what is the origin of pleasure? Why do I have this urge to enjoy? I wonder how many of you have asked yourself that question. Why do I have this urge to enjoy? Why do I have this propensity to seek pleasure? Why? Vedic knowledge of India deals directly with these questions. We are parts of the Supreme. We are parts of Krishna. We have all the tendencies of the Supreme in us, but in tiny quantity. Just like the drop of seawater has the qualities of the ocean, of the salt, but in tiny quantity. Because we are part of the Supreme, we have the tendencies of the Supreme. We have the tendencies of Krishna, but in very tiny amounts. In Krishna, the Supreme Cause of all causes, you'll find the pleasure-seeking propensity. Therefore, in the living entities, the parts of the Supreme, you'll also find the pleasure-seeking propensity. Because we are so tiny, our pleasure-seeking propensity gets easily frustrated and overwhelmed and impeded. But that is not the case for the Supreme Personality God of Krishna. Because Krishna is unlimited, Krishna's pleasure-seeking propensities and activities are never subject to any impediment. What we are speaking about is Krishna consciousness. The ancient science of hassle-free pleasure. In order for the living entity to experience hassle-free pleasure, the living entity has to live in harmonious relationship with the supreme source of all pleasure. Krishna means the all-attractive reservoir of pleasure, the source of all pleasure. If we as living entities are going to be successful in our quest for happiness, we need to link up with the source of all pleasure. Otherwise, we ourselves have such tiny capacity for acquiring pleasure, although we have such big desires. Maybe you've had this experience that you have a big desire to enjoy. You have a big desire for pleasure, but you just don't seem to have the means to achieve your desires, to fulfill your desires, and that leads to frustration. The amazing thing is that even when you get what you think you want, sometimes it does happen. Sometimes you get what you think you want and you're not satisfied. It's an amazing experience, isn't it? When you finally get what you think you want, sometimes, and it doesn't satisfy you. This is the power of material illusion. Most of the time you don't get what you want, but when you think you do, it still doesn't satisfy you. That should teach you something about our tiny capacity for pleasure seeking. But if you turn those desires for pleasure toward the source of all pleasure, in other words, if you become Krishna conscious of Krishna's pleasure and your relation to Krishna's pleasure, then your pleasure-seeking propensity does not experience impediment and frustration. It's only when you're on your own, thinking that you're an independent living entity with no relation to the complete whole, that's the only time when you are cut off from what will actually make your pleasure-seeking activity successful. You can't do it on your own. You cannot acquire pleasure alone on your own. Nor can it be done with other persons. You are tiny, the other persons are tiny. But if you learn true yoga means to connect with the source of all pleasure, to connect with Krishna, then your pleasure-seeking activities can be successful. Just like as long as you're trying to light a light bulb, and where you're screwing the light bulb in is not connected to a power source, the light won't go on. Similarly, as long as you're trying to light up your life, but you're not connected to the source of all pleasure, then there'll only be a vague shadow of pleasure in your life. So that's what we're chasing in our material existence. We're chasing the shadows of pleasure. We never really get our hands on something substantial. Shadows are easily spoiled by time. But the substance, the real pleasure, which is beyond time, we don't know how to get our hands on. We need to learn that. What we are speaking about is the need for Krishna consciousness, the need for spiritual development. Otherwise, this desire for pleasure will frustrate us, and ultimately we'll become very resigned and cynical, or we'll live in a fairy tale world in which we fool ourselves. To face reality means to understand. I have this pleasure seeking capacity. Now what do I do with it? What is the best thing to do? An intelligent person thinks like this. And an intelligent person surrounds himself or herself with others who think about these things. But you'll notice, if you surround yourself with persons who want to escape reality, then indeed that's what you'll do. You can surround yourself with persons who want to talk about everything except the essential issues of life. In this way, your valuable time is wasted. You're using your short human existence to discuss everything except what you should discuss. But because many people are doing that, you feel justified. So it takes a strong person to kind of stand up and go the other way. To stand up and say, I'm not going to let my life go down the drain like everyone else. I'm going to get a grip on my own life and face these questions and solve them. At least try. Because I have this pleasure-seeking capacity. Is it a curse? Why is it there? I want to enjoy. I want to feel good. But I can't feel good. I can't enjoy without the presence of some hassle, some impediment, some frustration, some disappointment. So am I cursed to suffer this paradox? No. You see, the fact that you want pleasure, the fact that you want to enjoy, lets you know that real enjoyment, real pleasure does exist, but not in the way you're looking for. Just like counterfeit money lets you know that real money exists somewhere. So we have this pleasure-seeking capacity. And it indicates that there is a perfect use for it. This pleasure-seeking capacity can be perfectly satisfied, but it has to be in the right place, in the right situation. Real spiritual life means to arrange your circumstances so that your pleasure-seeking capacity will actually be fulfilled. The only way that the pleasure-seeking capacity can be fulfilled is in relation to Krishna. That is called Krishna consciousness. To be conscious that I am part of Krishna. Krishna is the source of all pleasure. I'm a part of Krishna, therefore I have a tiny bit of pleasure or pleasure-seeking ability in me. But it's not enough what I have in me to get the job done on my own. I'm a part, and I have to relate to the whole. How do I relate to the complete whole? That is known as Bhakti Yoga, the yoga of transcendental love and devotion. These things are the most valuable treasures of life. How to understand myself? How to understand the Supreme? This is practical knowledge. What can you tell me that's more practical than your pleasure-seeking propensity, your capacity for enjoyment? That's the most dear thing to you. Not simply working or going to school and studying. All your activities are executed with the hope that there'll be pleasure. Or it can be indirect. So many activities are done by you in the hope that it will avoid pain. That's just the negative, avoiding pleasure. So in this way you can analyze your whole day from morning to night. It's basically involved in doing things that will push away distress, and doing things that will attract pleasure. That's the whole day. In these endeavors of pushing away distress and attracting happiness, we meet with disappointment, false hope, some satisfaction sometimes, never complete satisfaction, because time is there to prevent complete satisfaction. The intelligent person begins to think, are my efforts being misapplied? Is there something else? When you start thinking like that, then your human form of life has officially begun. From the standpoint of the Vedic knowledge of ancient India, human life doesn't begin simply by your having a human body. From the standpoint of the Vedic knowledge of ancient India, human life begins when you ask the right questions. Why is my pleasure-seeking capacity impeded? Why is my pleasure always bound up with hassles? Why is everything subject to the rule of time? Why? And is there a part of me that's not subject to the rule of time? It is these things that Krishna consciousness is concerned with in the beginning. Once these preliminary questions are asked, then you can say, my human form of life has begun. But it's not easy for people to think about these things these days, because the culture that we live in obliterates your self-analysis, obliterates your ability to see. And you do. That's all that's been taught. That's all that's been learned. Just be filled with petty desires. And you know time will destroy them all. But anyway, what else is there to do? So what we are trying to do in Krishna consciousness is raise the level of aspiration of the people. Don't settle for a mediocre life at best, in which, that's the way it is. There's nothing more than that, you know? You just gotta take the good with the bad, the bitter with the sweet, you know? That's life. No. Life is something else. There are two things we need to recognize. There is matter, and there is spirit. And beyond those two things, there is the source of both the matter and the spirit. So we need to get to know what is matter. We need to know, get to know what is spirit. And we need to get to know what is the source of all the matter and the spirit. Then our human form of life becomes successful. And then we can actually give the highest benefit to others. But you see, unless we have knowledge for ourselves, unless we know what's going on, how can we love anybody else? How can we give something substantial to someone else? And I know that you all want to give something substantial to someone else. You can't do that without knowledge about these things. So these are some basic points. The same aspirations, the same problems in different settings. People want satisfaction. They think consumer goods will satisfy them. Or they think nationalism will satisfy them. Tribalism will satisfy them. Always, the people are barking up the wrong tree, so to speak. Wherever I go in the world, I can see that. Always they're barking up the wrong tree. It's either this ism or that ism, this false hope or that false hope. This form of government will save us, or this form of government will satisfy us. We'll lay down our life for this form of government. This, our tribe, will lay down our life for our tribe, our nation. If we just have consumer goods, we'll be satisfied. And no one is satisfied. How many people are willing to look this issue of satisfaction and pleasure seeking squarely in the face and do something about it? Not many. But those who do can actually become the best friends of all the beings. Not only human beings, but all the beings. In all living entities, there is the spirit soul. That message is given in Bhagavad Gita. Within the material body, there is the soul. It is because of the soul that the body has life. That spirit soul is in all kinds of material bodies, not just humans. How do you get a certain kind of body? According to your activities in your past life, nature puts you in a certain body in this life, according to what you merit. This is karma. Just like everyone here may desire an expensive car, but you don't have enough money for an expensive vehicle, so you have to get what you can afford. So nature gives different types of vehicles to people according to what they can afford, due to their karma from their past life. The next life will be the same thing. According to what you do in this life, you deserve a certain kind of body in your next life. In this way, the intelligent person thinks, how can I get the best possible body in the next life? When you change houses or change cars or change computers or whatever, you're thinking, how can I get a better one the next time? So you have to think that way about your body too. How can I get a better body in the next life? And what is the best kind of body to have? The best kind of body to have is not a material body. Because the material body spoils all your attempts for pleasure. Because the material body is composed of time. It's a time bomb. The best kind of body to have is the spiritual body. Because the spiritual body is immune to time. Anything that has a beginning and end will frustrate you. So, if you want real pleasure, you've got to get out of the realm of beginnings and ends. That means you have to get out of the clutches of the material energy. Because anything about the material energy has a beginning and end. You have to take to the spiritual energy. You have to enter into the flow of the spiritual energy. Now, everybody can talk like that from time to time. Yeah, I'm getting into the spiritual thing, you know. And this word spiritual is used in so many circumstances. It covers anything from a feeling of exhilaration you get, you know, after scoring the winning try in a match, or, you know, say, your girlfriend or your boyfriend, feeling spiritual. Anything is spiritual these days, but no. You need to know precisely what spiritual refers to. The Vedic knowledge of ancient Asia will teach you. Spiritual refers to something that is beyond beginnings and ends. That is spiritual. Now, Krishna, the source of all energies, is not only the source of the spiritual energy, but also the material energy too. Everything comes from Krishna. Krishna is the source of this very material energy that we're trying to enjoy, but Krishna is also the source of the spiritual energy. Krishna's instructions in Bhagavad Gita are there to switch our enjoying attempts from matter to spirit. Real yoga involves these things. How to live peacefully in this world? You can only be peaceful when you've escaped the ravages of time. Otherwise, we'll always be in anxiety. We'll always be frustrated because time will ruin everything we have. Even our very bodies are ruined by time. Real yoga means techniques for getting out from the influence of time so that we're situated in the flow of the spiritual energy. The flow of spiritual energy means devotional energy. Because we are parts of the Supreme, we are parts of Krishna, that means our constitutional nature is to give love and devotion to Krishna, because Krishna is the source of everything. Krishna is the complete whole. Krishna contains us. Therefore, we inherently have a relationship with Krishna. And Krishna is the source of all pleasure. So when the living entities participate with Krishna in Krishna's pleasure, then the living entities can achieve pleasure without hassles. But it can't be done from within the confines of the material. Not possible. Now the amazing thing is that you don't have to wait until you die, until you give up this material frame, material body, before you can taste pleasure without hassle. No. Because both the spiritual and the material energies emanate from Krishna, if you use even this material world, which is ruled by time, in Krishna's service, if you use this time-ruled material world for Krishna's pleasure, then even while you're within the material world, you can become immune to the ravages of time because you're playing the game right. That is the highest mysticism of bhakti yoga, the yoga of transcendental love and devotion, as presented by Krishna in Bhagavad Gita. Even the material world becomes a paradise for those who haven't played a game right. Because although the material world is composed of matter, that matter is coming from Krishna. So if you play the game right and live in a certain way, Krishna can change even your material existence so that you can experience the full spiritual presence while apparently still within the clutches of time. So that is the high mysticism of bhakti yoga. So I just wanted to speak to you tonight about these stimulating points, hoping that some of you will try to take advantage of them. There's certainly other things you could have done this Friday night. Probably there'll be other things you'll do later in the night. But if you try to think about these things that we presented, you'll get the greatest benefit. It doesn't cost you anything to think about these things. And it'll do the greatest benefit to pursue these things that you presented. Especially if you pursue these things in the association of persons who have made these kind of themes their priority in life. You all know that when Friday and Saturday night comes in Wellington and you want to have a good time, as traditionally known, you try to find some fun-loving friends. Go to a pub, you go to a cinema, and busy throughout the city Friday evening, but the liquor stores are full. People are wanting to feel relief from their Monday through Friday work week. Just want to let loose, let go. And so they want to find out, where is there some party, where is there some merrymaking? Let's make merry. Or if you can't find a lot of friends, you'll be satisfied if you're just cuddling up with one friend for the night. Better have a friend for the night than no friend at all. And you try to pass the time. But you've chosen to come here tonight. And so we're trying to give you this highest scientific knowledge from ancient India. We have so many books that will give you an even better idea of what we're talking about and what we're doing, our Krishna conscious devotion. And if you're really incisive and very serious about getting the highest pleasure, you seek the association of those who are pursuing those things. You can choose. You can choose to associate with those who are seeking the lower pleasures, ruled by time, or you can choose to associate with those who are seeking the highest pleasures beyond the clutches of time. That is your choice. Krishna consciousness is for the most serious pleasure life. And all around you, in the city, you have the opportunities for those who are not serious pleasure. And that's what bugs you, that's what frustrates you when you think about it. You know when you're so-called making merry and passing the time away, this is not really satisfying. I've done this before. I'm sure some of you had that feeling when you're going through your so-called pleasurable activities with others. You can even catch yourself. And I said these same words before. You know, it's like something gnaws at the back of your mind. Here you go again. And you tell yourself, shut up, shut up. Enough of that. So what if I've done it before and I've been there before and done that before? It doesn't matter. I'm going to enjoy it this time. Anyway, even if I'm not going to enjoy it this time, I got to do something. What do you want? It's Friday night, Saturday night. You can see how we are, you know, we really become our own enemies, you know. In the back of your mind is that thought. Haven't I done this before? Yeah. Haven't I said all these things before? Who am I trying to fool? Hey, that's it. Don't think too much. Just play the game, you know. That's all there is. Talk the talk, you know. You got to get something out of somebody, so, you know, that's all there is. No, there's something much better for you to do. But the company you keep is very important for shaping your life. So if you associate with those who are dedicated to the lower things, that's the way your life will be shaped. And if you associate with those who are striving for the highest perfection of life, then that's the shape your life will take. So we appreciate you all for coming here tonight. We hope we've given you something to carry with you for the rest of your life. In one sense, that's not an easy thing to do, to give someone something that you carry with them for the rest of their life. Actually, what I've been saying to you is something that can be carried with you birth after birth. It's the truth of material existence and the truth of spiritual existence. Material existence is known in Sanskrit as samsara, the cycle of repeated birth and death. These things have been going on. So, this cycle of repeated birth and death continues. Just like there's the cycle of the seasons, winter, spring, summer, and fall. Similarly, your life goes through these cycles again and again and again. Until you finally learn techniques for getting out of the cycle. It's like you're on a Ferris wheel, and you don't know how to get off. So one minute you're on the bottom, next minute you're on the top, then the bottom, then the top, round and round and round. You can just imagine being on a Ferris wheel and not being able to get off. Quite boring. Up and down, up and down, up and down. In order to get off the Ferris wheel of material existence, you need to have knowledge. But you won't be attracted to get off the Ferris wheel of material existence unless you know there's something better. This is a dilemma that confronts so many of you. All right, yeah, I know what you're saying. It's true about material existence. Yeah, it's boring. I've been there, done that. I'm 21, and I've already done everything I can do the rest of my life. I'll just do it in different places. You know, I've basically done it all already. Yeah, it's true what you're saying, but is there anything better? In other words, don't expect me to give up my meager existence, my meager attempts at pleasure, if there's nothing better. This is all I know about, so how can you blame me? This shows that we need knowledge. When we become attracted to spiritual existence, When we know what is spiritual pleasure, then we'll easily give up the meager material existence. Therefore, the greatest need of the day is knowledge of Krishna, the supreme source of yoga. That is what bhakti yoga is about. The yoga of transcending the combination between the living entity and Krishna, the source of yoga. Krishna is the source of the material illusion, and Krishna is the source of spiritual perfection. And Krishna is the source of all the living entities. So, do you have any questions? Your past life, the karma of your past life has shaped the circumstances of your life in this life. But you can choose how you're going to deal with those circumstances. For example, according to your karma of your past life, you may have terminal cancer, but you can choose how you're going to cope with that. Actually, the Vedic knowledge in ancient India teaches you that all your happiness and distress is predetermined. I mean, all your pleasurable circumstances and your distressful circumstances are predetermined. But it's up to you how you deal with those distressing circumstances or pleasurable circumstances. Your response is in your hands, although your circumstances have been shaped by your past life. So free will exists simultaneously with predetermination. But it's you who's predetermined certain things. There's no injustice in life. Everyone gets exactly what they deserve. Now you should be thinking, how do you live a life free from karma? How do you get out of the clutches of karma? How do you perform activities which have no karma? That's what the intelligent person thinks. There are no innocent persons in this world. Everyone's bringing into this life their karma from their past life. The Bible explains this in a very simplified way. What you sow, that's what you're going to reap. The seeds you sow, you will reap them. Therefore, the intelligent person thinks, I'm tired of this endless complexity of action and reaction. Repeated birth and death, samsara, cycle of experiences. How do I get out of this? You can't get out as long as you're performing actions that have reactions. But you can't stop acting, you've got to do something. So Krishna consciousness means how to act so that there's no reaction. When you act for the pleasure of Krishna, then there's no reaction. No karma. And when there's no karma, the cycle of repeated birth and death comes to an end. Any other questions? No, the Vedic knowledge of ancient India teaches you that the human form of life is very special. It's a rarely gotten benediction. Yes, still, it's rare to get a human body. It's like there's a hotel, and the hotel has, you know, economy rooms, and budget rooms, backpacker rooms, and And it's got the penthouse suite. So the human body is like a penthouse suite. Actually, there's something beyond human body, even in this material world. It's called the devas, or demigods. But generally, you can say the human form of life is the penthouse in the hotel. So you're moved along automatically by the laws of nature until you get the human body. That's after so much time spent in plant and animal and insect and bird bodies. And finally, you get a shot at the human form. So if you misuse your human body, you don't try to achieve the purpose of the human body, which is enlightenment, then you go back down into the lower species of life, because you don't need a human body. You're not using it for what it's meant for. No. Human body is a junction. You can go up or down. The next material level up is devas, demigods. But you also have the option of going to the completely spiritual plane. Or you have the option of going down lower to the animals, plant, species like that. According to how you live this life. For instance, how much purchasing power you have. Unfortunately, the vast majority of people today are wasting that human opportunity. It's so rarely achieved. In the Vedic text Srimad Bhagavatam, you'll find a statement by a 5-year-old transcendentalist. And he said, give me the Sanskrit. Tomara acharya bhagya dhanan bhagavatam. From the very beginning of life, not when you're old and gray, but from the very beginning of your life, as soon as possible, you should begin your self-realization and quest for enlightenment. That is the purpose of the human body. The human body is very rarely achieved, and it's temporary, but still it has value, even though it's temporary. Because with it, you can achieve the highest perfection, which is escape from the clutches of time and establishment from your original Krishna consciousness. Okay? Association is of major importance. You are who you associate with. If you associate with persons who are absorbed in these topics we're discussing, then you'll be rightly focused. And if you absorb with the merrymakers, the so-called merrymakers, then that's what your life will be like. You know, we're creatures of association. We're not as strong as we make ourselves out to be. Whoever you're around, you take on their qualities and pursuits, right? So if you're really smart, you'll try to associate with the most advanced persons. And that will motivate you to become advanced. So actually, you're molding your own life by your association, your choice as to who you associate with. You want to change your life? Change your association. A major way. A lot of people like to have friends and associates who don't allow you to think. A lot of people like to have friends and associates who, agree with whatever you say. That's why they're your friends. They agree with whatever you say. A lot of people want friends who stop their thinking process. You know how it is when you don't want to think deeply, you know just who to call. Right? You know, just who to talk to. You know, just who will fill your mind with all sorts of silliness. That's known as a good friend from the material point of view. Someone who helps you forget all about the main issues of life. Just idle your day and night away. Sweet nothings, they call them. Sweet nothings. It's a good one. Anyone? Yes. No man or woman is mine. You can't live alone. You always will associate with someone. You can see that even people who claim that they're living alone, they'll have a cat or a dog or a goat or something. It's the same thing. I was just looking through Healthy Options magazine, and they had an article there about animal massage and how people, you know, take courses and do their certificates in massaging their pets. And people want to just love something. They want to care for something. So maybe they don't have any other human beings to associate with, so they'll have a pet. You know, they'll get a certificate in pet massage, and you know, you've seen, they'll talk to their pet, and it's a person. They'll be very sensitive to the pet's needs and moods. Everybody requires someone. So I don't think you can say, well, I choose not to associate with them. Pleasure is in relationship. Now, what is a healthy, productive relationship? What can you really contribute in a relationship? The real contribution is something that's beyond the ravages of time. For that kind of relationship, there has to be Krishna conscious relationship. In relation to Krishna, when living entities relate with Krishna in the center, as the fulcrum of that relationship, then it takes on the aspects of reality beyond the touches of time. So we're missing something in our attempts to establish relationships. We're missing the central point. We're missing the central thing that connects everyone and everything. We're missing the source of all the energy, the source of all the living. We are missing Krishna. Krishna means the source of all pleasure. So then what you do, forgetting Krishna, the infinite source of pleasure, you turn to something, some object, or some person, and you try to extract all your pleasure from that person. And sometimes you become adamant about it. You are going to satisfy me. You are the one. And you put such a burden on that person. You are going to do it for me. Do you understand? And then, naturally, when your hopes aren't fulfilled, you become quite angry. What? You're supposed to be the one. Why aren't you doing this for me? Then you get angry. Get out of my life. I never want to see you again. So much of our time is spent putting these artificial burdens on others, you know? You are going to be my everything. Get that straight. I have some needs, and you are going to fulfill them. You hear me? But you're putting all these burdens on someone who's a creature of time. Someone who has no knowledge. So what's the other person thinking? Well, gee, I don't know who I am. I don't know why I'm in this world. I don't know who you are. But here we are together. I guess you might as well do something. Yeah, I'm your everything. This is what goes on. In this way, people waste each other's time. And that's very, very sad. But you can understand, because people want pleasure. So they'll try in a mistaken way rather than not try at all. Because you can't help yourself. You are a pleasure-seeking creature. Krishna consciousness means to redirect your pleasure-seeking capacity in the direction that it should be redirected towards Krishna as a source of it. Otherwise, you're always going to be troubled by this pleasure-seeking capacity, trying to wring pleasure out of this thing or this person. It's like you get a wet towel and you wring it. Now, that's our approach to life. We try to wring pleasure out of this person or that thing. And we get very tired. By the time we're old, and we become very resigned. You can see that persons who are elderly, they're resigned. You know, they don't have many expectations. They just, you know, are concerned with their personal safety. But they have no more expectations for pleasure. Sometimes elderly people like to see that their children or grandchildren are enjoying. Then they try to get some vicarious pleasure out of that. I remember, where was I recently? Where did I see this? I must have been in Tokyo, Japan. In Japan, everyone works so hard until they're very old. And then when they're very old, they have to take care of the grandchildren because their children are working so hard. So, I remember watching one elderly couple, obviously grandparents. They were with their five-year-old grandson in a park in Tokyo. If you've ever been to Tokyo, you know, you can drive for 2 hours in every direction and never get out of never get out of the city. You know, 2 hours in any direction, just, you know, cement and steel everywhere for 2 hours, this way down. And they had these little tiny parks everywhere. So this elderly couple was in the park. And a five-year-old boy, he would climb up on something in the playground. And the grandparents said,
"Oh, you have climbed up."
And then the boy would climb down the ground.
"Oh, you have climbed down on the ground."
So I was trying to understand what is the taste that they're getting. The taste they're getting is they want to be in contact with some youth, some fresh life, because their life has ebbed away. So they get a nice feeling that here's this new boy, this new life, and he's experiencing climbing up, and then he's experiencing climbing down. For the grandparents, it's no thrill for themselves, but to see a new creature going up and then going down, especially a creature that's in relation to your own flesh and blood, your own body. So this way, I could see they felt that they were still in contact with vitality and freshness. The little boy would climb up.
"Oh,
yeah." And the little boy would wave, wave, wave. And the little boy would go down, and he'd be on the ground. And,
"Oh, you're down."
Obviously, I could see that the couple was resigned about their own opportunities for pleasure. I mean, they were in their late 60s. They couldn't work anymore. That's a horrible thing in Japan. You have to force people to retire. If no one wants to retire, in their 70s, because there's nothing else to do. No one wants to do in life except work and shop. So, you should think, what will be your future 30 years from now, 40 years from now? You should think like that. Don't spend your life now pursuing transitory pleasures, which will simply leave you frustrated now and in the future too. If you invest your energies now into mastering spiritual techniques of Krishna consciousness, then in the future, even when the body is old, still your pleasure-seeking activities will not be affected by the darkness of time. What to speak of when death comes. And as Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita, For one who has been born, death is certain, and for one who has died, birth is certain. It's the cycle of the universe. But you can get out of that cycle. Krishna says, those who go to Krishna, they don't go back to the cycle of repeated birth and death. Anything else? Come back into a better family in your next life requires good assets in this life. You have to qualify. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains that those who started the path of self-realization but didn't complete it in this life, they get to take birth in a family of transcendentalists in their next life. That's the best birth. Then there are births in materially opulent families. Those things don't happen by chance. Some people seem to be born with a silver spoon in their mouth. That's because of things they've done in their past life. Others are born into very distressed circumstances because of things that happened in the past life. Existence is very just. We're shockingly attached to our material illusion. I was reading about things that happened during the horrible events of September 11th in World Trade Centers. There was one share trading firm on about the 100th floor of one of the World Trade Center buildings, and when the plane hit, they felt the building shake and the ceiling above them was starting to split. And smoke was spilling. I saw the leader of the head of the company. It's a small share trading firm. Okay, we've got to evacuate. We've got to go for the fire escapes, the fire stairway. And some people, they actually lived, and they actually said that their first reaction was they didn't want to go. They felt irresponsible in abandoning their workplace. They actually said that. Some of them tried to, instead of heading for the fire escapes, were trying to pack up their desktop computers. Yes. Can you imagine the ceiling is splitting above you? There's just this horrible jolt. You don't know what's going on. Smoke is starting to fill everywhere. And even your boss says, let's get out of here. Let's go for the fire stairway. Oh, I have my job to the company. I have my duty. I cannot leave my workplace. Or if I do leave my workplace, I have to pack up my desktop computer. Yes, people were actually doing that. This shows you something about material illusion, how powerful it is. And then some other people, they felt the jolt, and they immediately wanted to escape, to go for the fire staircase. But then somebody else in the company had a bright idea. We don't know what's happening. We'll go turn on the radio and hear what's going on. So they went into an office and they turned on the radio. And there were these two DJs, and these kind of, I guess I'm sure they have it in New Zealand too, they're gonna have two DJs or two talk show hosts who are, just having banter between them and people call up and like that. I've seen billboards advertising these duos in New Zealand. Breakfast teams, So they had these two guys on the radio, when these people in the World Trade Center tuned in, that would happen. We just felt this enormous thud in the building, and, seems to be a bit of smoke in the air. We want to escape, but we'll turn on the radio. We'll get the lowdown on what's happening. So these two talk show hosts on the radio, were saying, guess what? Somebody just called in, with this joke that a plane hit the World Trade Center. It's amazing the practical jokes people play. So the people heard that and they said, it's nothing wrong, it's just a joke. And they stayed there. It's a true story. Somehow or other, though, they happened to escape, finally. That's how come you know the story. But this shows you what goes on, you know. I'm sure these two talk show hosts feel very embarrassed now. Well, what could they do? They're operating under the best knowledge they had at the time. Somebody called over this incredible story, and a plane just hit the World Trade Center 2 minutes ago. Hey, isn't that a good...